It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Wolves were once among the most numerous predators on our continent. However, by the 1970s, wolves were listed as endangered in the United States. Then, following years of debate and public comment, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made the decision to reintroduce wolves to Yellowstone National Park. Joining us to talk about their reintroduction and what we can learn from it, Douglas Smith, Yellowstone National Park wildlife biologist. He's also the leader of the Yellowstone Gray Wolf Restoration Project. He joins us by phone. Hello, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
I am fine. Great to have you with us this half hour. We want to mention that you will be in Iowa next week presenting a talk called 20 Years of Yellowstone Wolves, Reintroduction to Recovery. That's a week from today, Monday the 3rd at 8 p.m. at Iowa State University's Memorial Union. Let's start off, if you could, by telling us what we know about the wolf population in Yellowstone historically before it declined and was eliminated.
Well, Yellowstone was the world's first national park. That's a legacy Americans should be very proud of. And wolves were here at the time, 1872. But it was official government policy to eradicate all predators. Now, bears were spared, so that's a slightly different story. But things like wolves, cougars, coyotes, wolverines, bobcats, lynx were all killed off, you know, most prominently wolves and cougars. And so the last wolf was killed in Yellowstone, 1926.
Mm-hmm. That sounds incredible that all of those would just be exterminated. What was the thinking there? I guess there wasn't much thinking about the role they played in the environment there?
None. So this is an enlightened or modern-day view of predators. You know, predators, by definition, kill for a living. And they kill things that we would rather kill. And so there's competition, and occasionally they kill domestic livestock too. And so, you know, originally the park policy was reflecting everyone else's view at the times that there's good animals, you know, game animals, ones that we hunt, and then bad animals that kill those good animals. So there's really no use to have predators. And secondly, whatever they function, they serve, we can do that too, because we can be the predator. So we've been competitive with predators for, well, really, millennia.
Mm. Okay, so the gray wolf is eradicated from Yellowstone in the 1920s. What happens to the park? We have decades without them and without other predators there. What happened to the park that points to the importance of these predators?
Well, it dramatically changed, and we're still kind of unraveling those changes now through intensive scientific research. But it's ironic, but after all these predators were killed, and again, primarily wolves, the park began controlling elk numbers. So when you take out the primary predator, the next trophic level down, the prey, becomes out of control. And so from the early 30s to the late 60s, the National Park Service, with cooperators outside the park, primarily the state of Montana, killed or shipped elk to keep the elk population in check. And that number totaled roughly 77,000 elk between the 30s and the 60s were killed or shipped. Now, those elk were shipped to places where elk had been eliminated via market hunting and overhunting in other places like Alberta and Arizona. But yeah, without predators, to put it simply, the ecosystem is kind of out of whack or unstabilized. There's been a lot written about that. So the Park Service stepped in to keep the system quasi-natural. I would not call it natural when you don't have the predators in place. Mm-hmm. And then this thinking changed in the 60s. Some policy changes by the Park Service came about. And then, of course, most importantly, the Endangered Species Act of 1973, wolves were listed in 1974, that provided the vehicle or the mechanism to bring wolves back. And, of course, then we have Park Service policy, too, which is to restore and preserve natural systems, simply stated. But we are probably one of the only land management agencies in the United States that has as a mission preservation, which is no use, as opposed to many other agencies, which is conservation, which is wise use. And that's okay. It just should be pointed out that very few land management agencies go for preservation.
Mm-hmm. So tell us now, it's been 20 years since the reintroduction started. How many gray wolves are in Yellowstone?
We have 11 packs and about 130 wolves. Mm-hmm. That's up from the last 5 years where we were between 90 and 100. We peaked around 2003 at 174 wolves in 14 packs. So we're down from that high about 10 years ago. And that's primarily because the story I was telling you about elk was still going on. The Northern Yellowstone elk herd, which is one of seven elk herds in Yellowstone, was very large. A lot of outside scientists said too large or overpopulated. And that benefited wolves greatly. I mean, that's their primary food in Yellowstone. And their populations, burgeoned to probably over a long-term stable number. And so we've come down in the last 10 years. I think we're going to go down more this year. We don't officially count wolves until midwinter. And I think we've reached some kind of a stable number, or I hesitate to say because it's an abused word, some kind of equilibrium here. And so this is, I think, good news. And it's hard to say that because in the eyes of the National Park Service, you know, our mission, restore natural systems, I think fewer elk is more natural. But to the people who used to hunt elk coming out of Yellowstone around the park, this is not good news. So they're upset, and hence the controversy.
Mm-hmm. And hence that word equilibrium, it's in the eye of the beholder. One would say this, and one would say the hunters want there to be a higher population of elk, and they would say that's the equilibrium.
That's true. I'm referring to an equilibrium based on kind of ecological definitions, mm-hmm. not definitions from, defined by, social carrying capacity by humans. I'm looking at
right.
systemic things defined by ecology. So thank you for clarifying.
Okay. We want to reach out to our listeners. We have another 15 minutes or so with Doug Smith, Yellowstone Gray Wolf Restoration Project leader. What are your questions about wolves, their reintroduction to Yellowstone? Your thoughts about the reintroduction of wild predators in other parts of the U.S.? Perhaps he can talk about that. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, and you can tweet us at IPR Talk. So now with the reintroduction of these wolves, are these wolves, for instance, are they the same? They're not the same stock that was eradicated. Are this the same exact species, subspecies?
You are well read on this issue, Ben, because that's one of the most commonly asked questions that I get, that this was illegal because you reintroduced Canadian wolves, and Canadian wolves did not live in Yellowstone 70, 80 years ago. There are good reasons not to have wolves. Now, according to the National Park Service, those reasons don't apply, but they're hard to live with. Life is definitely more difficult with wolves than without them, but the reason that this is not the same subspecies is not a good argument against them, because I think, as everybody knows, the way we name nature is an artificial system that humans came up with, Carl Linnaeus in Sweden in the 1700s. It's a way of naming things that works really well until you get down to the very fine-grained issues of, subspecies. In other words, animals become different things, plants become different things because of what's called geographic isolation. They don't breed with each other anymore. What causes geographic isolation? Barriers to immigration. The populations can't exchange genes anymore. So through evolutionary time, those populations diverge and they become different things, different subspecies, different species. Nothing stops a wolf. Not a mountain range, not rivers, not chest deep snow, nothing. Indeed, wolves recolonized the Scandinavian Peninsula from Russia. Biologists asked if they crossed the ocean, the sea there that separates the peninsula from the mainland. And well, they came on the, they might have come on the ice. I mean, so they probably didn't, but they asked the question. So wolves are not a good example of a species that becomes isolated and turns into something new. And so what's important is the number of subspecies of wolves 30 years ago was 24. Now it's 5, and the top wolf biologist in the world doesn't even believe that's correct. There should be no subspecies in North America, just one species. So what's important is the wolves that were here are very similar to the wolves that we have now, and the most important thing are what I'll call ecological functionality, is that the role the wolves performed 100 years ago was taken out by humans. And now we have restored that ecological function with the similar species that filled the same niche. Mm-hmm. That's what's important. That's park policy. And I think in terms of natural functioning ecosystems, that's what we should be paying attention of, because humans are scrambling this omelet all the time. You know, animal species, plant species are having to adapt to new environments because of the disturbances that we impose on them all the time. So to say that we have to have the exact same mix of genes put back in Yellowstone that was here, I do not think is a solid argument.
You said that it's difficult to live with wolves. In what ways? Ranchers are losing some livestock. Tell us about that. What, besides livestock, the degree of livestock loss, what other problems?
Well, yes, that's true. It's a minor, it's a small amount. It's not economically damaging to the cattle or the livestock industry across the tri-state area. But if you're that individual rancher that's getting hit, yeah, it's a big deal to you. But certainly life is simpler without wolves. There's something that you have to think about, worry about. I completely empathize with the rancher that has an operation in wolf country now. If you've got bears, if you've got cougars, you've got wolves, they all might prey on your livestock. And so you add wolves to the mix, and they constantly repeat to me that yes, not that many domestic animals are killed, but I worry about it all the time, and sometimes the wolf comes around and doesn't kill anything and it worries my livestock. That's the problem. And I understand that. I get that. And so, people in the states are more into this than I am now, but, they're having to manage wolves and these other predators on what we call human-dominated landscapes. And that's hard. Yellowstone is not that. And a lot of the wilderness around Yellowstone is not that either. It's public land, and it's largely wild country. And I think it's important to keep it that way, so these big predators have a place to live. But the next ring out, you're on this human dominated landscape, and a person with a private business of raising livestock has valid concerns, and the states and formerly the Fish and Wildlife Service, I think we're doing a really good job at trying to coexist and balance these needs.
We have Doug Smith with us, Yellowstone Gray Wolf Restoration Project leader. Let's go to our phones. Fred is joining us from Iowa City. Hi, Fred. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah. I was wondering if Dr. Smith could talk about the threat to humans that wolves have posed either in North America, or actually what I'm interested in is if there's a difference between how threatening, how much of a danger wolves have been to humans. If there's a difference between that in North America or that in Europe and Asia. And the reason I ask, my understanding had always been that wolves were not a real predator of humans.
Mm. Great question, Fred. Not much time, so let's get right to it. Threat to humans? What is the, I assume, mythology here, Peter and the wolf and so forth?
Yeah. So short answer first, because those are best, and I don't want to be political here. No, wolves are not a human safety threat. Does that mean wolves have never attacked or killed anybody? Answer to that's no as well. There have been,
in this 20 years since the reintroduction of gray wolves, no human has been hurt or killed?
No, not in the Idaho-Montana area where we reintroduced the wolves. None in Yellowstone. No one's been hurt in Yellowstone. We have killed two wolves in Yellowstone because they lost their natural fear of people, but that's because people fed them food. And so they were basically walking up to people from a foot or two away and standing there looking at a person, and they were begging for food. And we thought that could lead to an injury, but it did not. But we prophylactically removed those wolves. And there have been three cases of wolves killing people in the last 20 years in North America, Canada, and Alaska. And those wolves were also, they had lost their natural fear of people. I don't know for sure, but they got food rewards, I think, in a couple of the cases. And they have to lose their natural fear of people. In the last 100 years, there's been roughly 20 attacks on people, no fatalities, except those three. This research was done before those three fatalities occurred. And they all involve of wolves being usually food conditioned, not entirely, but mostly wolves get food from people. It causes them to lose their natural fear. And then someone got bit. For example, six of those injuries were from the Alaska pipeline, where people were feeding them their lunchtime sandwiches, and it led to people getting bitten. Historically, way back in time, this questioner is very astute, well-read. In Europe, there may be some cases hundreds of years ago, Poland, Russia, where wolves might have killed people. I'm not crisp on those. Certainly, some of that's in the literature. It's very hard to separate rabid wolves from non-rabid. And of course, rabid wolves are a human safety threat, but a wolf without rabies is not. And that historical record is oftentimes not clear on these attacks on humans 500 years ago in Poland or Russia. Did they or did they not have rabies? But when I walk out in the woods, I am not worried about wolves. I've pulled wolf pups out of dens. I've chased wolves off of kills. I've looked them in the eye at, you know, tens of feet. Never been worried. I hike in Yellowstone, and I worry about bears and cougars all the time. So I think that's the best I can say about that.
What can you do also in part to get rid of the myths and have us a better understanding for wolves? Tell us about their social community, how they work in their packs, and perhaps what they think of us.
Well, they're afraid of us. I think they just can't figure us out because we walk on two legs. But they're just like us. They're identical to us, and that's where some wolf biologists think that people don't like them is because, you know, there's only room for one of us. But they live in family groups. They're very monogamous. They're good parents. They're very social. They're master communicators. They communicate primarily non-verbally, you know, body postures. But they also, you know, they howl, and they have many quiet vocalizations that they use between them. So they're hunters. They're big hunters, and they're territorial. You know, this is mine, keep off. And those are all human traits. And so several very distinguished wolf biologists feel our problems with wolves stem from jealousy and competition. And so there's only room for one group like that, and that's going to be humans.
Do people who oppose predators see that the wolves differently than they would see bears or mountain lions?
They do. I mean, there's levels of predator dislike. I almost said hatred. To me, that's too strong of a word. But, you know, the issue of, you know, like I said, when Yellowstone was founded, good animal, bad animal, and all bad animals are predators, you know, that's deeply embedded in our culture. And that applies to all predators. You know, there's this, you know, people used to shoot hawks and falcons too, you know, because, and eagles, because they were predators. But I would say, because I've spent all of my adult life studying wolves, that wolf hatred can reach higher levels. And I think it's because of that likeness to humans, that, you know, to a degree, intimacy with humans that we've had. And I'm speaking to dogs. You know, essentially, a dog is 98-99% wolf. And that last 1-2% that is not wolf is what we've knocked off of wolves so we can live with them. And so there's so much that we have together in common connection to wolves. It does, you know, when I talk with people who don't like wolves, it's a measure higher than their dislike of, say, bears and cougars.
Mm. We have about 5 minutes left with Doug Smith of Yellowstone Gray Wolf Restoration Project. Tell us, what are the current biggest challenges you face when you look at the wolf populations now and into the decades to come?
Well, I think the biggest one is the expansion of, you know, human-dominated landscapes, because, you know, certainly we have issues along the border with wolf hunting that we've got to work out, but those are all solvable. In fact, to a large degree, we have solved them. In other words, there's no hunting in Yellowstone, and those wolves are accustomed to that, so they're not that, you know, wary of people. They leave the park, and there is hunting. And the states have been really good about working through that with us and protecting wolves that leave the park. Not entirely. Hunters are still allowed to take some, but we've worked through that. And those are issues where, you know, if there's a problem, wolves bounce back from mistakes there. But the big thing is that wolves need a lot of land. So do grizzly bears, so do cougars. And, you know, the future of big wild tracts of land like northern Canada has, you know, there's some concern of how long that's going to exist with growing populations and more development and things of that nature. So, you know, nature's kind of on the run. And the first thing to go will be things like wolves because they need land. And as I said 5 minutes ago, when people are on the land, coexistence is harder to find. So places like Yellowstone and the public land that surround it, you know, could become much rarer in the future. And I think that's something that we need to debate as a society. I think we need to be aware of that, and we need to talk about it. And right now, it's not a large debate. It is a debate in some areas, but not everywhere.
You said you wanted to keep politics out of this, but I have to ask, with this debate, it does have a political dimension, but can you say whether one major party or the other is on the side of wolf populations and one not?
No. It's amazing how this is a bipartisan issue. I really cannot believe how it's a bipartisan issue. The first Bush administration, and I, because of limited time, I won't go into it, James McClure, Republican senator from Idaho, first Bush administration really laid the bureaucratic groundwork for reintroduction to occur. The Clinton administration orchestrated it. They carried through on all the groundwork that McClure and Bush first set up, and then it was executed finally again under Bush II and Obama. And, you know, I deal with a lot of people who like wolves, and they come from both sides. So this, I think, is news that's positive given the polarized world we live into, and that is the environment does not have to be a partisan issue. Historically, it wasn't. It's a little bit now, and the wolf issue is a great example of where it has been bipartisan. That gives me a great deal of hope.
Very quickly, do you think we talked about the eradication being the mindset in the 1920s and before? Will we have we have a long ways to go. What is the ideal way to think about wolves in the future if you go 80 and 100 years from now?
Wildland. They need space, and we don't want to give them space, but very simply they need space. Can we give them space?
Okay, Doug Smith, Yellowstone Gray Wolf Restoration Project, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Doug will be presenting 20 years of Yellowstone Wolves next Monday at 8 p.m. at Iowa State University's Memorial Union. Coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about a bone that was found on the banks of the Siberian River. It's the oldest modern genome yet recovered. We'll talk with two anthropologists from the University of Iowa about it when we come back. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.